Hello, everyone. It's Tanya Gabrielle here on a fabulous December 16th. And boy, it's a big breakthrough day today. It's an incredible day for downloads, inspiration, emotional release. It's just been really an amazing day so far for just getting insights and tuning in. And so I'm sure this call will be wonderful as well. So welcome all of you who are here. Now, as usual, if you do have a question for me today, you can line up right now by pressing star 6 on your phone and getting in line. And I also have one email question today that came in, so I'll address that first. But first, I want to also briefly just reiterate what I put in the email I sent out a couple days ago. When we had an issue come up that was unbeknownst to me in Future Forecast Formula, where I had actually misnamed one of the aspects, which when I found out and looked at the comment in Numerology Academy, I was like, oh my God, what happened? So I went in and I checked what happened, and basically this aspect does not exist. The 105 degree aspect is not really used much in astrology. So, and the name so there's no real name. The unofficial name that's given to the aspect, which I was calling sesquiquadrate, is actually squine, S-Q-U-I-N-E. That's the unofficial name. And when I saw that, when I had to name the actual aspect, the 105 degrees aspect, and I saw that this is what it was named, this is when I was creating Future Forecast Formula, I was like, no, I don't like that name at all. So I called it sesquiquintile. And so, but in my actual drawing up of the slides, I actually wrote the wrong word. I wrote sesquiquadrate by accident. And because I hadn't actually used the term, I was just referring it to, for myself, as 105 degrees, it somehow was translated throughout the course as sesquiquadrate, and I really apologize for that. I am calling it, this is just me, I'm calling it a sesquiquintile. The point is, it's 105 degrees, and that's really all that matters. Your clients do not really need to hear what these aspects are called. When you read for them, remember that the aspect is not what you talk about. It is the fact that it's arcing, right? So it's the arc that matters, not the nature of the aspect. So I'm sorry the confusion I created here, because the sesquiquadrate actually is an aspect in astrology, and that is the 135 degrees. So having said that, let's now move on to the nature of these aspects. So there's something that I discovered when I looked back at these, and that is in numerology, which I find so fascinating. And that is that every aspect that we are dealing with is in the 369 triad of numerology. When you actually add up the degree numbers, we have the 369 triad of numerology being triggered. So, for example, aside from the conjunction, which is 0 degrees, which is not a number, we have the square, which is 90 degrees. Of course, that adds up to 9. We have the opposition, 180 degrees, adds up to 9. We have the sesquiquintile, 105 degrees, which is a 6. Semi-square, 45 degrees, 9. And sesquiquadrate, of course, we just talked about, 135 degrees is a 9. We're not using that, but that's another 9. Then we have the trine, 120 degrees, which is a 3. The sextile, 60 degrees, which is a 6. And another aspect called the inconjunct, which is 150 degrees, also called a quincunx by some. But that's a 6, 150 degrees is 6. So we have 369, the basis of all astrology aspects. And why is that important for forecasting? Why am I bringing this up for Future Forecast Formula? Well, because when we are looking at these aspects for our clients, when all of them reduce to a number of self-expression and feeling, the whole point of any aspect when it comes in touch with another planet or an important part in your chart is to feel, is to actually get inside your heart and feel and be in touch with that most sacred part of you, which is the heart center, the connection, the intuitive connection that you have, right? So it's just, you know, makes total sense that these aspects, all of them reduce to a 3, 6, or 9. And in fact, most of the hard aspects, what we call quote-unquote hard aspects or difficult aspects or challenging aspects in astrology, most of them reduce to 9, which is release, letting go, endings, right? So that's really interesting to me too. So anyway, this is something that I realized when I was looking at the sesquiquintile and just writing down the aspects and everything. And it's just really, to me, a very important part of the numerology part of not only forecasting, but astronumerology in general. So let's go to the email question, and then I'll take your calls. And again, press star 6 to get in line for the calls. For the questions. We have Diane asking, first she says, thank you for the clarification. No apology necessary. Also for an amazing future forecast formula class. I'll be listening again and again and again after that. Fascinating stuff. Okay. So thank you, Diane. I appreciate that. So your question is a very interesting one. You're asking about a person who's born on a full moon. So when anybody's born under a full moon, that means the sun is opposite the moon in the natal chart. That's how the moon becomes full, because the sun is opposite it and shining right on the moon, and that creates a full moon. So that is called a challenging or hard aspect in astrology. So Diane is asking, how would you read for a client with this placement regarding their relationship with and between mom and dad? Do you believe oppositions represent karmic relationships? Okay, this is a really big question. So first I'll answer the birth chart question, and then I'll go into forecasting. So when a client has a full moon, which would mean sun opposite moon, basically they are learning about relationships. The opposition of sun and moon, that's like the two most important personal planets, and of course sun is a star, but the two most personal parts in terms of, you know, the actual okay, I do not know what happened, but what I'm going to do, I think I may have lost, well, I did lose my phone service for some weird reason. So I'm on my cell phone now, so I hope
you can hear me. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to turn the Q&A off. Or let me just see if one of you, if you guys can hear me. I'm going to click on one of you guys now. So this is Rayora. Rayora, can you tell me if you can hear me right now?
I can. You disappeared, but
okay,
you're
back. Good. I'm back. Okay, but I'm going to put you on mute again. I just was double checking because my phone literally went out. And so I'm calling on my cell phone now. Good. I'm back. So we'll get to you in a sec. I just wanted to finish my thought process here. So, okay, thank you. So, sorry about that. I don't know what happened. I heard a click. Anyway, I am back. It is the 16th. So we have these sudden events happen. Oh, my God. Talk about numerology acting up again. So I was talking about the sun and moon and how important this question is, because when a person has a full moon in their natal chart, they have that opposition, right? And so it represents an internal division between emotion and will, where the moon is the emotion and the will is the sun, okay? So it represents really the mother and father aspect, the emotion and the will. And so if you are willing to work on your relationships as a client, so if you have this and you're the person, you need to really be willing to work on relationships, and you usually are more willing than many other people because you have a great awareness of this division. And yes, in terms of your parents, you know, yes, it's very likely your parents had difficulties with each other, but to tell you the truth, this is not the only sign of showing that the parents have difficulty. In fact, there's many, many other signs. So this is not the only sign that your parents may divorce, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't want people to think, oh, my gosh, sun and moon opposite usually means that. Well, there are many other ways that you can actually see that. And if you have the sun and moon trying to each other, your parents can still divorce, is what I'm saying. But in any case, there is some kind of challenge between the feeling and the will to move forward. And so there can be sometimes a dissipation of energy even. You will find with full moon people that, you know, for 1 month they forge ahead and are really tuned in to what they want to do, and then they take a time out for a while and do the opposite. So they can go back and forth and fluctuate with their energy levels. Now, for forecasting, part two of my answers for forecasting, because this is future forecast formula, and so how would you look at this? So, first of all, where is this happening in your client's house, in their chart? What other aspects are touching the sun and moon? And in terms of transits, progression, and arcs, how are they aspecting the house or the sun and moon? So how is this particular inner struggle being activated right now? And so that can be activated in a many, many ways, you know, millions of ways, really, because you have the whole chart to consider, the birth chart, the promise in the birth chart, and then all the different ways it gets triggered throughout the person's life. So in terms of, do I believe oppositions represent karmic relationships between sun and moon? Well, you know, the word karma can be used in different ways. I believe that if that person marries someone who has a similar setup or has a very deep conjunction or another aspect like a square to their sun or moon, yes, it could be karmic. You have to look at both people. If you're asking whether your client's parents have a karmic relationship because your client, their child, has sun and moon opposite in their chart, not necessarily, because you're not looking at the actual individuals whose relationship it is, right? So, it gets a little more in-depth. You need to really look at the actual people in the relationship, right? So, okay, so I hope that answers your question. It's a fabulous question, because it represents the two light bodies, and it's really the inner emotional life versus the impetus, the action, the joie de vivre, which is the sun, you know, the will, the drive, And so there is a push and pull, really, at all times with people who have this in their birth charts. Okay. All right. So let's move now to Ryora. Now that I'm back and Ryora is here, we know for sure because she answered me. Hi, Ryora.
Hi.
thanks for confirming I'm back.
Yeah,
funny. You're like my constant.
To other stuff too, isn't it?
I was going
to address a couple of things today, Tanya. First off, on the Clooney overview on lesson six,
mm-hmm.
I realized in that. Maybe it's just me and the way I'm hearing you say it, but I came away with a lot of why questions, like when you'd say Neptune, which is what was at critical degree four degrees, conjunct the south node in the 12th house, you'd say it affects relationships to family and groups. Why would that be in the 12th house? I thought groups in that was in the 11th house.
Yes, let me pull up his chart if you don't mind. I just need to. You're talking about his birth chart now, right? Is that what you're referring to, or I need to just pull up what you're looking at?
I'm just off my notes here. I just wrote down Neptune at critical degree 4 degrees, conjunct south node, and you said affects relationships and family groups in the 12th house, and I couldn't figure out why.
Yeah, that's why I need to look at his chart. So if you bear with me for just a moment. And I will get that open so I'm prepared to answer your question. Let's see, George Clooney, here we go. Okay. All right, so your question is about a conjunction in the 12th house between what and what? Say that again.
Neptune at 4 degrees,
mm-hmm.
in the south node.
Mm-hmm. I see, okay. Let me just look at what's going on here. At his chart. Oh, I know why I said that. It's because it involves the nodes. In forecasting, when the nodes are being aspected, so only in forecasting, right? If you have an arc or transit or progression to a node, it represents groups. The nodes represent the groups. You see what
only
I mean?
Only in forecasting.
In forecasting, they yes. In your natal chart, it represents the past and the future.
Right.
But in forecasting, it represents groups. So if a node is aspecting you, or if you are being aspected, if one of your natal nodes is being aspected, it is about how you respond to groups. Okay? That's
okay.
Why.
In the 12th house, though, wouldn't it still reflect the elements of the 12th house with the...
yes, that would color it even more.
You know,
yes, it would. It would. It would also represent 12th house. I think what I was speaking to at that point was the actual aspect, right, involving the node. But yes, you're right. In the 12th house, yes, it would affect those hidden issues and endings. Yes.
Okay. Well, I had several other why questions on the same principle where it was kind of like, huh? And
mm-hmm.
That before I get into any of that, and there might not even be time for it, I wanted to touch on something that has come up. Tanya, we're confused. Several of us are confused. The way that the slides were put together this time, it was confusing. And I think it was partially because things weren't corrected before they were put out. And so
you're talking about which slide?
It makes it very confusing. Pardon?
Okay, which webinar are you talking about now?
I'm talking about through this whole forecast forecast formula series. For instance, there were the slides where the birth codes didn't match the charts, or maybe things were mislabeled in the charts and you caught it when you were presenting it, or maybe it was something that was given as a, you'd say, this activates this, but didn't explain why it activated it. So It just left us as students kind of confused. Can you hear where I'm coming from?
Not really, because when you don't give me an example, I have no idea, because it's like how many hours? It's 6 times, let's say, an hour and a half. So you're talking about many, many hours here of my, you know, explaining and reading. So when you give a comment like that, I'm like, I have no idea. You know,
okay, I believe JFK was one of them, that if you want to look at it. I think he was one of them, that the birth code information didn't match the chart information, and you said, well, just ignore that. But yet we're supposed to work with the code information in relation to the chart, so that meant we had to back up and go to the previous slide in order to connect those, that kind of thing.
Okay, now, in the PDF, I would have corrected that. Let me make sure that the PDF, which hopefully you have in front of you as well,
no,
when you're
I
looking
don't
at this.
Moment.
Okay. Now, what I'm saying is when you're looking through this slide, it's good to have that, you know. The PDFs, I would go back and make the corrections before printing them out and sending them. So let me check the JFK birth info and make sure that it is corrected in the PDF. I do recommend that. Now, when I am giving these, when I'm creating these slides, occasionally I do let a birthday slip by on the left side or right side, wherever it happens to be positioned, because I'm focusing on the astrology. And then I do correct myself, you know. So what I'm hoping you are doing, too, is writing things down, because I don't want you guys just to look at the slides. I literally want you to have a pad and paper in front of you and take notes, right? So that it's in front of you and you're seeing the code. And, you know, of course, I apologize for some of those. If you want me to redo the whole thing or insert it, I can do that. But sometimes in the moment, I have a little mistake like that where the birthday isn't listed correctly. But I will always mention it, and the PDF should reflect the correct birthday. So if it's printed out, it should be pretty clear. So if you can send me an email, Rara, with all of the issues that obviously you have found, I'd be happy to look at them.
Okay. I'm not just trying to fault find, Tanya. I'm just saying that this has made it more difficult to be a student in this, because it's just confusing. It's confusing.
Mm-hmm. I understand. So if you could just send me an email, that would be easier than just saying, for many of us, this whole course has been confusing. That doesn't help me. I'm not going to go through the whole course.
I understand,
right?
That,
so,
nor can I.
Yeah.
Itinerize everything that it probably needs to be handled in an email, but I wanted to just make you aware of that now. Do you have time to answer one more question as far as the chart goes? I mean, as far as
sure.
the aspects goes that I was looking at? Or do you
sure.
need to get on to others?
No. Ask me a question.
Okay. You have Venus at 20 degrees, squaring Uranus at 21.3.
Are you talking about George Clooney now? Which chart are you
yes,
talking about?
Still Clooney. It's still Clooney.
Okay.
Okay. This, okay. I'm sorry, I lost my place. Venus in the third house progressed. Uranus in the sixth house, natal. They are squared.
Mm-hmm.
Venus at 20,
mm-hmm.
Uranus at 21.3.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you say that brings new relationships when triggered in this way. Why would that be?
Because Venus is the planet of relationships and love. In forecasting, that's how you treat it, and also in your chart, it shows relationships. But in general, in forecasting, aspects to Venus and from Venus are about relationships.
Okay, but you said new relationships. Is that because of the Uranus factor?
Yes, that's because of Uranus, because Uranus is about the future and breakthroughs and new experiences. Yeah.
Okay, but do you
so what I said, you know, well, some of these questions about how I get the sense, Rara, that you're confused how I'm interpreting. And so what I said right off the bat, also in Numerology Academy, is that if you want to know more about the relationships between these planets when they are transiting, progressed, or solar arc, there are a lot of books out there that'll tell you what these relationships are. My course was not about going through every one of these relationships between the planets, because that would be a huge course. And there's so much already out there. Mm-hmm. I'm teaching astronumerology, which doesn't exist anywhere. So it's brand new. So I wanted all of you to have your own books about transits and progression so you can refer to them and see and learn that way. I didn't want to go through that. So I think a lot of your questions hopefully can be answered by just taking that time, too, so that you understand why I would interpret something like Venus Uranus this way. And so the other thing is, you know, if you spend a little time just understanding the nature of forecasting is interpreted slightly differently than the natal chart, you know. So, for example, in a natal chart, a Venus-Uranus aspect, yes, it would show that you would have interesting relationships, but it would also show that your relationships with women would be very invigorating and transformative and, you know, create breakthroughs. In a forecast situation, it really is more about relationships, especially intimate ones, that are created in a sudden way or in an unexpected way. Because in forecasting, you're literally pointing to an event, right, or a theme that's there for a certain amount of time, whereas in a natal chart, it's more of a general, the promise, you know, that the person has in terms of expressing beauty, for example, right, or making money in sudden ways, because Venus can also represent that, can represent wealth and beauty and money. So books that you have in your library will help you also, you know, to see why it is that I'm explaining it in the way I do in my forecast. Does that make sense?
Partially, yes.
Are you? Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Good. I'm
okay,
happy to hear
so
that.
Okay, we'll go on to somebody else then.
Okay, thank you, Rara. And please do send me an email if you can. I'd appreciate
okay.
that.
Okay,
right. Thanks. All right, bye-bye. Okay, let's go to Anonymous Jazzy
Hi.
Girl.
Hi, Tanya. This
Hi.
Is Linda.
Hi, Linda. Thank
how
you for
you?
Pointing that out to me.
Well, I was having a hard time with how to identify them, and then I was going on to sources to read, and then I kept reading that it was not 105, and I was like, what's going on here? So that's why I figured I better email, because I was having I too am one of the ones that are confused. But anyway, I did have some why questions too, but based on what you said to Rayora, I will revise my question. Is can you send us a list of books that you recommend to learn what the hard aspects mean to in the solar arc?
Oh, okay. Yes, I can definitely send you some of the books that I would recommend. Now you're talking about forecasting, like transit progression. Is that what
What you just said to Rayora about knowing what the progressions, I mean, what the solar arcs mean, like when she was asking you about Venus and like what
sure,
those
yeah,
mean.
That's a great idea. I will send out an email and recommend some books that literally talk about the aspects between the planets and the angles, because that's something that is out there already written about, so it wasn't something that I wanted to really cover in this course. I just wanted to open up the doors to this brand new forecasting system using astrology and numerology. So that's a really good idea. I will do that. Yeah.
Okay. And the second question I had was, You mentioned during one of the Numerology Academy webinars that Angelina Jolie's Venus was prominently placed in her chart, and then you mentioned it again in regarding someone, I can't remember, in Future Forecast Formula. What constitutes a prominent placing for the...
Let me pull up her chart and see, because, again, I don't know people's charts by heart.
And I can't remember who you were talking about in Future Forecast. I think it was in lesson 6, but I can't remember who it was. I was like, well, what constitutes being prominently placed?
Okay, that's a big question. And again, I would have to look at the chart. Okay, I don't see Angelina in my chart file. So let's see. I have to figure out where I have her chart. Hold on. Let's see here. Angelina Jolie, birth chart. There we go. Okay. All right. Let's see. Yes. You know what makes it prominent is it's right on the ascendant. It literally is 28 degrees, and her ascendant is 28 degree Cancer. Her Venus is 28 degree Cancer. It literally is conjunct even by the actual degree number.
Okay.
Right? So when a planet is placed there or in the midheaven or any of the four angles, really,
okay,
and is conjunct any of the four angles, it's very, very prominent.
Okay. And would that be the only case? Because I don't think that the other person was. But it could have been one of the four angles.
Oh, no, there are other conjunctions and placements, too, that would make it prominent as well. If you give me the person's name, I can check the chart.
Yeah, I have to go back and listen to lesson. I think it was in lesson 6, one of the three that you went over then, but I can't remember who it was.
Oh, okay.
So,
yeah, with Jolie, too, she also has another planet conjunct her midheaven. I don't know if you have her chart in front of you, but Jupiter is conjunct her midheaven at 17 degrees. Her midheaven is 17 degrees Aries, and her Jupiter is 17 degrees Aries.
Uh-huh.
But she has two planets that are conjunct one of the angles, which gives her a lot of magnetism, too. And then, of course, you look at the numbers, and you can go much deeper into this. But, yeah, so... definitely the angles. Also, when something's conjunct a ruling planet, either ruling planet of the ascendant or ruling planet of the sun sign, right? Anything conjunct the sun, even some of the hard aspects like an opposition would qualify, like if it's a very, very close opposition to like the sun or the moon. Those things are important. But really the prominence comes more from the conjuncts to the midheaven and the ascendant and, the critical degrees that we discussed and the Aries point in particular that are taught in Future Forecast Formula.
So those would make a planet prominent and Venus in particular one.
Yeah, and her Venus is also at 28 degrees, which is one of the critical degrees. Remember, 28, 29 also makes it even stronger. So
Okay.
Yeah.
And then a couple of the charts that you said for the solar arcs, when a planet is on the ascendant or just turns to a new sign, does
mm-hmm.
that specifically mean something? For instance, that you gave the example of Marianne Williamson for November 4th, 2014. So I decided to do my chart for the solar arc too, and for the solar arc on that day, it's 20. My Uranus is at 25 degrees Libra, and my ascendant is at 27 degrees Libra, and my Pluto is at 00 degrees Scorpio. And that scared me because I was like, what's going on?
That's hilarious. Okay, here's the deal. Your Pluto is the big one because it just crossed over into a brand new sign, and that will take Pluto. That's a big deal. But the other ones, it would take a while till they cross over, right?
So it's more when they change into the sign, not on the ascendant.
Well, no, the ascendant too is a big deal. You said one was close to the ascendant, 28 degrees, is that what you said?
No, my ascendant's 27 degrees Libra, and Uranus is at 25 degrees Libra on that day.
Yeah, and you're talking, this is progressions or what, solar arc?
It's the solar arc.
Okay. That Uranus getting mighty close, yes. It's within the 2 degree mark, right?
Uh-huh.
So you would absolutely start feeling it then.
But what will I start feeling? I mean,
how do we
know what these mean other than it's a big deal? So
it's a big deal because, well, first of all, you need to know what your ascendant is, what the sign is, right?
Libra.
What does the ascendant mean to you, right? What does Libra mean to you personally?
Mm-hmm.
I don't have your chart right in front of me, but you look at that, and then Uranus would trigger those things. So for you, obviously balance is part of Libra and making things legal, you know, anything related to courts is related to Libra. So if you have anything that needs to be tied up in terms of a contract, that is covered by Libra, which is the scales.
Okay.
But so I don't know if you have that or not, but that would be triggered during that period, especially in relation to you, because it's your ascendant.
Okay.
So, and then Uranus is, of course, the big planet of change and breakthroughs and looking to the future. So you yourself will undergo a major transformation about how you feel, how you look, your wardrobe. And since Libra is ruled by Venus, beauty will enter your life. And just looking at beauty in a new way and feeling beautiful, and what does that mean to you? What does it mean to you to beautify your surroundings? It's many things, and then you look at your actual house, and is there anything in the first house?
The solar arc Uranus is in the 12th house, and Pluto Scorpio at 00 is in the first house of the solar arcs. But then I don't have anything in my natal chart of the 12th house, but there's Neptune in my natal first.
Neptune is in your first house and your natal chart?
In the natal chart, uh-huh, at Scorpio at 15 degrees.
Okay. You need to pay attention to those spiritual issues then. Deep spiritual issues and being near water. You know, Neptune rules water. So I don't know if you're near water now, but just in terms of the whole feeling of feeling good and beautiful and all of that is part of. So Neptune colors your first house. Scorpio is a water sign. It's part of your first house. So you want to just look at those issues that Scorpio represents. Now, Pluto rules Scorpio.
Right. I just realized that.
Yeah, and Pluto is currently arcing in that first house. So you have a lot of transformation happening for you right now. A lot of empowerment. You know, Pluto is very much about empowerment. So there's just going to be a lot of shifts for you, and you'll just be open to that. You know,
so it doesn't have to mean something bad, because I was looking at that race car. What's that Fast and Furious guy?
Who?
The actor that just died, the Fast and Furious actor.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking at his chart, too, and I think something was going on with Uranus, too, and I think that's what scared me, was that the people who I was looking at, because I was trying to figure out, well, what does it mean? So I'll start studying people who have died, and we knew,
oh my God.
knew what happened to them on a particular day, right?
Right.
So,
okay, I see what you mean. Well, look.
And I saw the Uranus,
who...
and I was like, oh, no.
Well, look, you know, here's the thing. It's so complex. So... His chart was very different than yours. You know, the way Uranus affected him was also, you know, partly his choosing, right? He made a decision that day, right? So every day has many decisions. And so in any case, his chart is different than yours. So for you, I would also like you to look at people who have positive things happen to them and then look at where the Uranus is, not just people who die. I know that is an actual date you can latch on to, and that's why you did that, but there are other ways to do it as well, you know. So in your case, I would certainly not, you know, look at it that way.
because that's the danger, you know, where you can literally latch onto that certain planets represent this or that, and it doesn't waver. No.
In future forecasting, we can only tell them what the planets mean, not exactly what an event will happen.
No, you can never predict the event. You can predict, or I should say forecast, I don't like predict. You can forecast the actual color and even the actual way in which an event can unfold, or the direction, like is it going to be in the realm of relationships? Will it be in the realm of prominence or career? Or, you know, you can look at those things very, very clearly because of the houses, right? The houses are amazing in helping with that. And also the rulership of the houses. Remember, you have to always remember, look at the rulership. If a house is Cancer, you want to look at where's the moon. Is the moon being aspected? Well, what house, if your ascendant is Cancer, for example, then the first house is very much affected if the moon is aspected, even though the moon may be in the eighth house. Your first house is affected, right? So that's how you tie it together as well. You have to look at the whole picture. But yes, okay. That's how you can sort of see the areas where things can unfold, and then you can see the color, right? And you can see mm-hmm. the intensity with the solar arcs. The solar arcs really give you the intensity and another flavor as well, because you can see with the aspect, which is the books that I'll send you, you know, you look at, well, what does it mean when Neptune touches the sun? What does that mean, right? In a solar arc progression or transit. What does it mean when Mars and Saturn aspect each other, right? What does that mean? And then you look at it in terms of the house. The problem with books is they give you one side of the story. You then have to go into the chart and read the whole thing, because you have to see where the planets are, first of all, what house they're in. Do they play a particularly important role in that person's life? Are they a ruler of an important part of the chart, the sun sign, the ascendant, the midheaven, right? You want to know all those things.
You an example. So my ascendant is Libra at 27 degrees. On that same mm-hmm. day, solar arc Venus is at 8 degrees in Leo in my 10th house. So that would mean that, like, my career would transform, or relationships in my career could transform some way that day and have more of a sunny aspect because of the Leo. I'm just pulling this off the top of my head. I don't remember.
No, that's right. Is this did you say the Venus?
Solar arc Venus is at 8 degrees
solar.
Leo in the 10th
okay.
house on that day.
Now remember, with arcs, it will last about a year. So
okay.
don't think of it in terms of a day. That's why you want to look at progressions and transits, especially progressed moon and
okay.
The transits of the solar planets, because they will show you when that Venus is being triggered. See what I mean?
I see. So that Venus could have been triggered it could have been actually in July or something like that, that it
exactly.
actually started. Okay.
Yeah. The other thing is, now you're talking about your 10th house, as opposed to, is the Venus being triggered? Because the Venus is your solar arc Venus. I just don't want to confuse people. Now, you're not looking at, like, when are transiting planets aspecting my solar arc planets? You don't do that. That's very confusing. You want to look at, well, when is Venus in my natal chart being triggered? Okay, so where's your natal Venus, right? Find that,
mm-hmm.
and then figure out, okay, so your solar arc Venus is being triggered on those particular days when your natal Venus is aspected by transits or progression. Does that make sense? So don't try to aspect your solar arc planets. Don't try to use transits and progressions to form aspects to solar arc planets, because they're not your birth chart. They have been forwarded, right? So you don't want to use a transiting Mars squaring your solar arc Venus. That doesn't make any sense. You get what I'm saying? You want to use transiting Mars, or even better, progressed Mars, to form an aspect to your natal Venus. Do you understand?
Does that make sense?
No.
All right, okay, so my natal Venus is at 20 degrees Gemini in the 8th house. So I would have to wait until at some point Venus in the transits or the progressions is hard aspecting my natal Venus in order for it to trigger the solar arc Venus?
Yes. And the other way, that's one way, right? That's uh-huh. a way to gauge how your solar arc Venus is acting and when it will activate. But the other way, which is even more pronounced, is to look at if Venus in your 10th house right now, you said it was solar arc Venus was where?
8 degrees
what
Leo.
Okay. So if that 8 degree Leo is anywhere close to aspecting one of your natal planets in any way, is it aspecting by square, opposition, conjunction, sesquiquintile, semi-square, trine, sextile, any planet in your natal chart?
Yeah, that's the part I still have to work on being able to find those quickly. Because
well, the most important ones are the hard aspects. So find those first. If there's a sextile or trine, pay attention to. It's just not quite as important. But you want to. Those are the ones that when they are triggered, in addition by a progressed planet or a transiting planet. So let's say, let me give you an example. Your solar arc Venus is at 8 degrees Leo, and it's aspecting by square your sun, I'm just making this up, at 8 degrees Scorpio, and that's a square. Or let's say it's 9 degrees Scorpio, okay? So it's like a year away. Let's say this is your natal sun. Let's say your natal sun at 9 degrees Scorpio is having an opposition by progressed moon this coming March. That Venus square sun, which will be all about relationships and forecasting for you, mm-hmm. Would be totally triggered by that progressed moon opposite your sun. You see what I mean? Because your sun is now being triggered two ways, by solar arc and by progression.
Okay.
And so then you know, okay, I see now my progressed moon is opposite my natal sun, but I also know for a four-year period there's this hard aspect from Venus, this solar arc, I should say, this arc from Venus to my sun.
Now, why is it 4 years?
And because you have a two-degree orb on either side.
Oh, okay.
So it lasts about 4 years. And the way you pinpoint it is obviously the closer it gets to being exact, magnified, right? So so once it's at nine, once your Venus would be at 9 degrees in this example I'm giving, it would be exact. So that's when you really feel the energy. But you start feeling it within 2 degrees of it being. So once that Venus would have been at 7 degrees Leo and your sun's at 9 degrees Scorpio, you would start feeling it. Just like I said with you when you asked the example of Uranus getting close to your ascendant,
mm-hmm.
It's now within 2 degrees of your ascendant, right?
Okay.
So you start feeling it now.
Okay. All right, I have
to. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I just have to keep practicing. So for that 2 degrees orb, so if it's a, like if there's 92 degrees difference between planets, is that still considered a square or is that? Not.
It is. It's the end of one. So
okay,
then
so
you can go
would
back.
Go to 88 to 92 for all of the, there's 2 degrees
yep.
on either side.
Plus and minus 2 degrees always. Yeah, I did say that in the future forecast formula.
Yeah, I didn't understand what that meant. Okay.
Okay.
But now I do.
Just like when I talked about the critical degrees, there's a 2 degree orb,
mm-hmm.
and I actually gave you those. I said mm-hmm. Gemini 28 degrees to Cancer 2 degrees. That's a 2 degree orb because it's 0 degrees Cancer.
Okay.
Is you know, so that's how you, a 2 degree orb always means minus plus and minus 2 degrees
mm-hmm.
from the exact point. Yeah.
Okay. And then just one last question. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
you know, when it does the solar art in the IO edition, when it says the progress to, like even if I put in a certain time, it changes it to the GMT. Does that matter? And do we take into consideration where the person is in the world compared to when they were born for the solar arcs and the progressions and the transits?
Oh, you know, progressions are, I mean, for me, just getting the day is enough. Because,
okay.
You know, with transits, you do want to know the time sometimes, the exact time. But with
uh-huh.
progressions, they move so slowly. I mean, even the moon takes a degree, I mean, it takes a month to move a degree in progression. So
Can you say that again? The progressions take what?
The progressions take a long time. And you're just looking at the Sun, Moon, Venus, Mercury, and Mars,
okay.
right, for the progress planets. You are never looking at the other ones. They move way too slowly. So you always look, I said, I taught that in Future Progress Formula. So you only look at those planets.
Okay.
And the moon is the fastest one of them all.
Mm-hmm.
And the moon only moves 1 degree a month in the progression. So if you just get the day that you're doing the forecast for, the client, I mean,
mm-hmm.
it's totally fine. You don't need
okay.
to have an exact time. Yeah.
Okay. And sorry to dominate the time, but I had a lot of questions.
That's okay. No, it's good. They're all good. I'm happy. I know it's complicated because you're dealing with a birth chart and a three different kinds of forecasting charts, and it's complicated, right? So
mm-hmm.
it takes a while to digest, and the more you do, the easier it gets, you know. So keep plugging at it. Just don't always do people who have died.
Okay.
people do. I'm just joking. I mean, you know, seriously, it's like look at some people who are creating some magical moments in their life too. It's very interesting to watch that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
But that would probably have to be somebody close to you, and they'd be wondering why you want to know. So I don't know. I guess I have
there's some well-known people out there that are having some good successes. You know, I mean, most of that stuff is what they want you to hear. So you sometimes take it with a grain of salt. You don't
mm-hmm.
know what their personal life is really like, right? So, but in terms of like, if you want to check. You know, if you know somebody just won an Academy Award, for example, whenever that happens, you can check their chart, right? Because
mm-hmm.
that's a major success for them, right? Something like that. You know?
Okay.
So.
Okay. I will
okay.
start working on that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Have a good
okay. Let's see here. We have a 787 area code.
Hi, Tanya. It's Nancy. How are you?
Hi, Nancy. I'm well. How are you?
Good, thank you. Okay, my question is not very exact. It might just be really more me, but in studying all of this, especially now with the future forecast and comparing it to our level one and just everything, I'm sort of feeling a little bit confused by the restrictions. Like, I feel like there's a lot. Just listening to you guys and stuff, because there's still a lot I don't get, but I feel like you still have a tendency to have like a lightness, and I wondered if you could talk a little bit about like how do you keep the lightness and the like a freedom when you're doing this work for people? Do you know what I mean? Like a little bit more do you know what I'm saying? Like a little bit freer, not just so exact to like, okay, well, this is what your chart shows, so how do you still convey that and talk to people, even looking at your own, and still keep a lightness of possibility? Maybe that's what I'm trying to say. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a very good question. Wow. You know, this has been mentioned to me by people who say one reason they have readings with me is because I'm able to do what you just said. It's something that I just by nature do. I think it's because of how I am just as a person. I do really want my clients to feel that they are in control and that the universe is not controlling them. And the only way to feel that is if you come out of a reading with something that really empowers you, and that would have to be positive. So what I do is it's not like I negate challenges when I see them. I certainly address them in my readings. However, I always find a way for them to see what's behind the challenge and how they can emerge from it. So that depends on the client, of course, too, right? The client's response to the information is key here. So you always, it's a dance between you and the client where you tune in and tune in and tune in. This is an interesting question you bring up, because when you read these books, which I'll recommend with forecasting, some of them can be very negative, and they used to be a lot more negative, by the way. Way back when there weren't a lot of books, you read somebody like Alan Leo, who was a very famous astrologer, and he was pretty much black and white in his forecasting and in his natal chart descriptions. So it was like either, you know, really good or just really sucked. And you were like sitting there going, oh, no. Like, seriously? So that has all really shifted in the last couple decades, thank God. So people are seeing it more as a transformation as opposed to this huge, obstacle. Because what happens is when your perspective is one where an actual aspect, let's say there's an aspect between Pluto and Saturn and it's a square, and whether it's a transit or a solar arc, and you know, way back when that would have been interpreted as extremely challenging, whereas now you actually go into the archetypes of these two planets, Pluto and Saturn, and you understand, well, one is about learning and discipline, and the other is about complete transformation and an overhaul of everything I ever believed in. And then you say, well, you know, it's necessary for me, because if I want to move forward and feel really in control and in power of my life, there's tons I need to really check out here in terms of what my belief system is, you know, how I've set up my life, day-to-day living, et cetera. So what I do with my clients, I literally take them through a contract that they then make for themselves to empower themselves so that they don't see a challenging aspect like that as a negative, but as an opportunity to move through and to grow. And that's really the difference. It's really your perspective as a divination arts practitioner that allows you to move one direction or the other. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's
okay.
Why you do need to know the shadow side as well as the positive side, but then you tune into your client, and as an intuitive, that's where your intuition comes in, you really get a sense, you know, what is it, this hour with me that they're having, or this hour and a half they're spending with me, how can I best serve them so that they leave feeling like they have a real gift that allows them to progress and move forward, you know, with a sense of positive reinforcement and positive energy. Yes, they do need to be informed of those things that are holding them back, right, that you see in their numerology code and their astrology chart. Yes, they need to be told that, but not at the expense of a way to show them out of that situation, right, so that they can see, okay, if I do this and I move from here to here and my perspective on this changes to one of, one where I can literally shift it and let go. Because some clients won't want to do this, you'll find. Some clients will say, well, I'm not sure I can do that. I'm not sure I can talk to my mom. Or I'm not sure I can talk to my husband and do this. Or I'm not sure I can move. Or I'm not sure I can, you know. Then you just say, well, you know, it's totally up to you. I'm just letting you know what I'm seeing is your current situation and what they're sharing with you, right? And so you're just letting them know what you send, but you allow them the space so that they know, they sure know from you what it is they can do, and then it's up to them. You know, meaning they get a positive plan, a roadmap from you that allows them to see what they can do to shift that you always want to give your client, right? So that they have at least something to work with. And then it's, of course, up to them whether they implement or not.
Right. Okay.
I don't know if that answers your question.
It does answer the question. I guess
it doesn't answer?
No, it does. It does answer my question. Do you find that you do that for yourself as well? Like, a lot of healing is personal right now because I'm learning my own stuff. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, absolutely. You know, it all starts at home. You know, so what I do for me and my family is what I do for my clients, right? So it's not like I beat myself over the head and then don't do that for my clients. I mean, that, you know what I mean?
I understand. No, that's great. I get you did answer my question. I just tend to get a little like I could feel myself suffocating as I go through the pages. So
the amount of information can be very overwhelming. The amount of information. So take it just one step at a time. Like for example, try just to do transits. Don't even go to progressions and solarics. Just do transits for a while. Just do those. Because they will give you, and of course you always want to do the personal year, right? Personal month. You want to look at that relationship to the birth numbers. So you always start with the numerology, which is so easy to calculate. And then just do transits for a while and see what you learn from them, right? And then move on to adding progressions, especially the progressed moon. The progressed sun, as you know, is the same as solar arc sun. So solar arc sun, progressed sun, same thing. Okay, so, and then after you've done that for a while, then move into solar arcs. I didn't learn all of these at once, okay, like I've been teaching in Future Forecast Formula. So the overwhelm factor, I can certainly understand, right? I do get it. So I think maybe try doing it that way, and maybe many of you might want to do this. Just do the first couple webinars and then take a break and then add the progression, then add the, you know, the soloric last.
Yeah.
Right. And in the meantime, the books I recommend will allow you just to see the relationships in general, and then you can apply them. Once you know them for transit, you can apply them for your progression and with solarics. Because they all have the same meaning. So that's the good news. They all have the same meaning. Okay, so all the, whether it's transits, progressed planet, or solar arc, what they do to your natal planets, it's the same. It's just that it lasts a different length of time, right? Because it's you know, transits move faster, and, right? So that's the only difference, really.
Okay. All right, well, thank you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Nancy. Okay, good. Bye-bye. Okay, I think that's it for today. Another great call. And any of you out there who have questions, please make sure you email them in. Sometimes an email really helps because then if you're asking me about charts of people or parts of the webinar, I can have it open in front of me and really delve in to the question with you and be totally prepared. So that always helps if you have specific questions like that. And anyway, I look forward to, you know, many, many more calls with you as the sky changes, you know, constantly. There's a lot coming up for all of us in 2014. So there will be a lot to talk about for you and your clients. And meantime, wish you a wonderful holiday season. A great new year, and I will see you in January. Thank you so much. All right, bye-bye.